Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Out. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 20. NASDAQ Futures down, I guess we'll say 40, because both of them are trading this week, the March and the December. December will come off the board, I believe, on Thursday. Right now, both are trading, and they're both about the same. We have the professor.
You do.
How are you, bud?
Well, you know, doing fine. You know, we traded some emails back and forth about all the craziness.
Yeah.
And corruption in the court. And, you know, I think one of the things, I mean, I know you know this, Chief, but some of the listeners maybe don't. And they just think that this is kind of an abstract sort of thing. But the problem with all the corruption that goes on, you know, we've talked about this whole thing with the so-called migrants. I have a very good friend of mine who got stuck at O'Hare, was passing through there. That wasn't the final destination. But you know how it goes sometimes when you have a connecting flight and by the time your plane gets there, the other one is long gone.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Actually, we're lucky in Chicago because most of the time you're leaving from O'Hare to somewhere else. I don't think I've ever connected from O'Hare, so...
Oh no, I know. I mean, when I lived there, we were having a few beers the other night, and she's relaying this to me. I said, how well do you know O'Hare Airfield? I said, well, you know, considering that I lived about 15 miles up the road for quite a while.
Yeah.
and then in the city where the most logical way to get there was to take the blue line, and right, I mean, yes, you could come out the Kennedy. You could also. You could also sit on the Kennedy for 2 hours in a traffic jam too. So she gets stranded there, and they shove her in the. Now I didn't know that Comfort Inn has a Displanes, which I'm assuming. I don't know exactly where it is, but I'm assuming that this is the same. It's basically off the same stop where the Hilton is. By the convention center, first one, right? Anyway, that's where they stuck her. She goes in there, and there's got to be 50 migrants, all of whom are waiting for some voucher so they can get rooms. And she says she's never felt more intimidated and at risk of being attacked. I mean, this is a single white woman, okay? and. They're all just hanging around the lobby.
But she wasn't attacked.
Huh?
But she wasn't attacked.
There's 50 people, a couple of them were screaming, infants. And it's like, this is like not cool. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I just got stranded in a weird town and...
Yeah, it's a little intimidating.
More than a little, I would say. And then, so I mean, the thing is, it's like, oh, no, they're not really like, clogged it up. And I'm like, well, obviously, in this particular case, they were.
Well, I that we're on the same page in terms of the world being as screwed up as it is and people having to flee their places for whatever reasons. Maybe it's economic, maybe it's wherever, but some of it is the corruption. I want to talk a little bit about that. By the way, I do have something here for even you might not have known this. I found this absolutely incredible. I'm going way off the topic, and I promise to come right back. Some guy writes into I'd never heard this. Some guy writes into the Quora talking about the first critical mass at the University of Chicago, right?
Yeah.
And they had a neutron counter on the thing. I have no idea what a neutron counter is. Was regular. Yes. And then the clicks became faster and faster, and after a while they became a roar. Suddenly, right. Fermi raised his hand and announced the pile is critical.
Right.
So at 3:53, the world's first controlled nuclear fission reaction stopped completely. To celebrate, those presented open up a flask of Chianti, guys like you, which yeah. Eugene Wigner had brought for the occasion. They drank it from paper cups. Sounds like something we would do.
Yes.
And someone asked the Italian physicist to sign the straw, and they all signed the thing, and the bottle is now in Argonne lap.
Yes.
But I didn't know this. A little later, a guy named Arthur Compton, and was he in the movie Head of the Manhattan Project in Chicago, returned to his official, he called this guy James Conant, who's a high official in Washington. He made the call speaking in code in case someone else had listened in. Get a load of this. Jim, I think you were interested in what the Italian navigator has just arrived in a new world. The Earth was not as large as he had estimated, and he has arrived in a new world faster than he expected. The code phrase was music to the ears of the other guy, whose antenna perked up. He says, really? Did the natives welcome him in a friendly manner? Everybody landed safely. And that was his message, that the pile had gone critical and everything worked.
Everything worked the way it was supposed to. Yeah, well, that. So that's...
And didn't blow up the city, which is nice.
Well, by the way you design something like this is that thermal expansion, of course, makes things go a little bit farther apart, right?
Yep.
Well, that's how it works.
I'm with you. Okay.
Well, that's how it works. Okay. Yeah. So, it's basic physics. And essentially, the way you design it is that thermal expansion makes the reactivity a little bit less because as things get further apart, the likelihood that the neutron that is released from the fission will hit another atom and cause another fission goes down a little bit. And so that's part of the calculation that goes into designing something like this. Because if it ever makes it go faster, it goes boom really fast. it's totally uncontrollable. So, yeah. So there. I mean, this was all part of the. Of course, now we have enough experience with this that we know what these constants are. But at the time, they were like, well, we think this is right.
Plus, they really didn't know how dangerous radiation was for people. A lot of those guys really got burned bad.
Well, some of them got there were consequences, especially for the guy when they were first. Figuring out the weapons side of it, there was this thing that was called the Demon Core that did screw quite a few people.
Well, it also blew off. I don't know if it was after what year it was, but John Wayne and those guys were making a big movie in Nevada.
Oh, yeah. They were testing and they all got irradiated and very
everybody died from cancer within like the next 20 years.
Yeah, very bad things happened. So, but anyway, back to the point I was.
Well, the difference we have in our view of this is that you think it's 90%. These people are all screwed up, I've watched a group in Chicago here every day. Right, drive right by them twice a day, and I think it's not 90% bad people. It's 80% incompetence. The problem is not that big for a city. Now, New York, these other places, they might have been inundated way worse than Chicago. Chicago was not. We're talking about an area of 6 million people, and what do we get, 40,000? For Christ's sake, that's the crowd of the Cub game.
Well, understand.
But we have, Chief, we have you started out the show by talking about
incompetence. I get where you're coming from, okay? But the problem is not... Look, the problem is not can you absorb blah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That is never the issue. The issue is what example do you set when you absorb blah?
Oh, I understand that.
What do you incentivize within everybody else?
It's called the moral hazard.
That's correct. It is exactly the same moral hazard argument that's made. Well, we have to bail out this bank because we can't let them go blow up and blah 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 blah. They did a stupid thing, but we can't allow them to pay the consequences for being stupid. And the problem with doing this is nowhere is it more evident today than in the medical system.
Oh,
okay.
We also said something that was correct 8 months ago. We both agreed. Imagine that. We both agreed. And even Kevin. We had Kevin agree. Not one thing that we talk about that we care about on this show would be talked about in the campaign. And we were correct.
Right. And it wasn't.
Yep.
But the thing is this, is that now, you know, you're starting to see, all right, I mean, you know, we talked about Friday. We have the MTS out. You know, you scooped me because I was skiing when it came out. Yep. Okay, you know, this is all fine.
You know how much I enjoyed that, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, it was great, right? you know, the MTS comes out, and it shows that this was not a one-off. It's a policy, okay, essentially. Now, a policy that has a use-by date, because guess what? Here comes the new guy. And oh, by the way, but the example that has been set and the result, I mean, you only need to look at the, you know, at the areas of the market and what it's done since the election, okay, that, well, you know, gee, this is a, boy, everybody loves a rising stock market, right? Yeah, roaring bull.
Oh, yeah, it's all, you're the genius because you own the stock.
Yeah, you're a genius. And you know, everybody's a genius because of this. Nobody's paying attention to the fact that at the same time, eggs went from $1.50 to $6, right? Except everybody does notice it, you know, a couple weeks later when they go to the store. So now we've got this impulse that's in the system, and you know, as we all know, there is a lag between doing these kind of things in a monetary sense. And it's showing up in the data. All right. Now, it shows up in your grocery bill faster than it shows up in the CPI. Go figure that one out. Right?
But if you were somebody who don't take this personally wrong, because I won't be doing it, I do it to myself too. You are not anybody cares about. And neither
am
I.
Well, I understand.
The fact is, the rich people in this country got enormously richer yesterday because the market went up. Nobody cares about. Those people don't buy eggs. People buy them for them.
Oh, no, I understand that. Hey, listen, you know, and here's the thing. Did you hear what Janet Yellen said the other day?
I can't imagine what she said.
She said she was sorry that they didn't get the deficit under control.
They're not going to because people don't want them to.
Well, she was sorry.
I will find it here because I'm cleaning. I'm always cleaning.
So here's
American people want the deficit balanced. They don't want any cut in any entitlement. They don't want any cut anywhere, over the place.
And part of this is intentional misdirection, okay? That goes on all the time, because every politician conflates Social Security and CMS, all of them. Okay, they all bundle them together and call it, you know, the mandatory spending or entitlements, you know, whatever word they choose to. They never separate out the components. And the reality of it is that while Social Security is currently running at a cash deficit, it's relatively small. And as recently as a couple of years ago, it actually turned a cash surplus.
We could add a half a year and add half a percent to somebody's taxes, and you know what, it'd be okay.
Well, that's the thing is you could put 0.5% on the FICA tax rate, okay,
or bump somebody a year in their retirement.
And lift the cap by a modest amount, right? Because Social Security caps off, Medicare doesn't, but you could lift the cap by a modest amount at the same time and put 0.5% on it, and it would come into balance. And here's the other thing about it: the entire reason that these programs were designed with a treasury bond buffer in them, all right, was actually very sound actuarial science, because there are going to be times that there are population booms and there are times that there are going to be busts, okay, from a population growth perspective. This has always happened throughout human history. It will happen again. And so there will be times that there is a pig in the python, so to speak, and those people will make money. They will earn more than the system pays out, and then there will be times that there will be fewer of them earning than the system pays out. Therefore, you've got this buffer in order to.
Plus, we bumped a lot of them off with COVID.
Well, yeah, we did, didn't we?
Yeah.
All right. So the thing is that this buffer is there for that reason. Okay, that's why it was designed that way. The people who designed it actually were not idiots. And they weren't committing a fraud, which many people try to claim, you know, that it was a Ponzi scheme. No, it wasn't a Ponzi scheme. Social Security, as it was designed, was founded on, I mean, now you can disagree with the philosophy behind it. That's a different question. But as to whether or not it was a Ponzi scheme at inception, the answer is no, it was not. And by the way, neither was Medicare at inception.
But Social Security was never actuarially put together. It was a tax and a welfare system that never matched.
Well, okay, you're correct in the technical sense in that if you are a higher earner, you get much less back for your dollars put in than does the guy at the bottom.
Except you generally live longer.
Well, yes, but I'm saying it's regressive.
Yes.
Okay. It is an intentionally regressive system in that the guy who makes minimum wage puts in much less, but for every dollar he puts in, he gets back much more. Okay. So the system is designed
you maxed out in those days. You maxed out where pretty much anybody working maxed out.
Well, but you maxed up. But the thing is, the other thing that people, you know, that I just want to take Elizabeth Warren out back and beat her with a baseball bat when she runs this crap, when she opens her mouth and starts this, because, you know, I've been in that, you know, that above the cap bracket for, you know, decent part of my working life, right? I mean, I've got several years on my, you know, my history that's all there is, folks. Okay. Here's the thing. I put that money in, but I'm going to get back way less on a percentage basis when I start drawing it than the person who was, you know, making 20 grand a year.
Well, I mean, that's what I said. It was a system.
But the thing is this, Chief, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is this. This, as the boomers die, and I'm on the tail end of it. I was born in 63, all right? So they are starting to now, and of course COVID accelerated this to some extent. Gee, that wasn't intentional, paying people for toe tags. I wonder what the motive might have been there. But leaving aside the intentionality of it or lack thereof, the reality of it is that's going to happen. When it does, then the drawdown will slow down. And you know, that's the way the system was built to withstand that kind of thing. And it's okay. Now, what isn't okay is taking a system that was designed for 4% of GDP, which is what Medicare was, and all of a sudden allowing through fraud, coercion, extortion, which, by the way, the entire medical system is involved in, okay, all of a sudden goes to 20%.
Well, it's
and
too quick.
Because, Chief, you've multiplied the payout by five, but you haven't touched the taxes.
You have been, I've had a couple of run-ins with the medical community, meaning I had a health issue a while ago that in this day and age was fixed, and, you know, 50 years ago, I'd think I'd be pushing up daisies. But
you'd be in a box, right.
But I had a heart rhythm problem when I was 50 years old, a long time ago.
Right.
And
right.
They had this new thing called an ablation.
Right, I know what it is. Yeah.
And but in those days, get a load of this. It was 9 hours, and I was awake.
Right.
And they had, you know, kind of a team of people in the room, and they were all. We're talking 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And maybe even a little more. And the bill for the 9 hours in the cath lab was $120,000.
Right.
So since I was awake. And kind of bored, just sitting there with the la-la medicine. But I remember stuff, and I'm trying to count the people in the room. And I had a pretty good idea of who they all were. As a matter of fact, one of the guys goes, "Hey, I was just listening to your show an hour ago." So one of the doctors. So when John and I were on the score, so they, you know, they were nice to me and blah, blah, blah. Evidently, I didn't say something bad about the medical community because they didn't kill me. So I started counting people up, and I said, okay, we're going to pay the two main doctors. I'm going to pay them, even if they're making $1 million a year, I'm going to pay them for the week. And
right.
What about the other guys? I'm going to pay them for the week. And I'm going to pay $20,000 for the room. I still only came up to 50 G's, not 120.
Right, but see, this is...
And I have no idea where they came up with the 120. Insurance paid like 80 or something.
Chief, I do. Okay.
Well, it's called overhead rate.
No. Well,
yeah.
But here's the combination of problems. Okay. The first one is that insurance companies, as I have pointed out on the show, and as nobody wants to discuss, insurance companies are state-regulated entities, okay, and by law can only have a 10% operating margin.
Yeah, but you can pay people whatever you want and call it a cost.
Ah, exactly. So that's the first part. And then you have places like United Health, you know, the guy whose CEO just got popped.
Yeah.
By the way, they came up with an even better way to scam this, which is to have a bunch of captive LLCs that are not insurance companies.
I would, and
guess what that means? That means they're not capped.
If Russell was ever let me near one of his classes for 10 minutes, the first thing I would say when I walk in, guys, you're pretty smart people, you're MBA class, I want you to do something for me that I don't think you can do. And I'll put on the board, I'll say, define profit in today's world.
Right.
I don't think anybody can do it. I don't know if I can.
Well, here's the reality of it, okay? As I pointed out when I wrote the series of articles that came from part of the work I did in my book, this problem is extremely easy to fix. And this is the reason that if you want me to be sorry that somebody got mad enough to go take that out on an executive personally, I'm not going to be. And in fact, I'm going to offer toasts every time it happens until the government stops this stuff and the people demand it stop. And it's this simple. Insurance is a thing you buy against an unlikely event that you can't afford to cover on your own. Okay? That's what it is. You pool your money together because it's unlikely that your house is going to burn down. It's not likely. All right. You didn't just light it on fire. You didn't just spray, 2 gallons of gas around a basement and strike a match. It's a possibility that your house is going to burn. And if it does, you can't afford to replace it. Okay, fine. So you buy insurance against that possibility. If insurance for your car included every tire balance and oil change and,
which they're trying to do, by the way.
Well, I understand that, but if a replacement of the drive belt for your air conditioner and you wouldn't believe the price, right? And on top of that, all the independent mechanics, including guys like myself that I sit there and I wrench on my own car, we would all of a sudden have no reason to do it because there'd be no capacity. All of the AutoZones and everything else would Rock Autos would all disappear in an afternoon. And the reason is, this is all built in. Well, I paid for it. I'm going to use it, right? All right, so that's the first problem. The second problem that you have is that you cannot allow these entities to be directly connected to the billing and the costing. Ever. If you do, you're going to get fraud. It's going to be writ large, and the costs are going to explode. And this is it, Chief. This is easy to fix. Everybody has to pay the same price, and everybody gets a bill, and then they submit it in. And what the insurance company is willing to pay is a separate question from what the price is. And they have to be legally distinct.
Carl, everybody who has any economic background whatsoever knows that, and I don't understand how.
As soon as you do it, the problem goes away.
But for some reason, it's like we had Rostenkowski. Remember that name, chairman of the Ways and Means Committee.
Right.
He was talking about capital gains, and he said, you know what? We should just index this.
Oh, I know.
And he goes, I haven't found anybody in Washington in my 25 years to ever agree with me because it's the simplest solution in the world.
Well, I understand it. But look, here's the thing. Let's just say that, what is the impetus for somebody to do this, right? And the answer is not doing it is a felony. It's called extortion. You get an explanation of benefits, when you went and had that procedure done, right? You got an explanation of benefits that said your insurance company paid blah. Here was the rack.
Except
price.
This stuff becomes so part of today's world.
Chief,
you're not getting any disagreement on me. You're asking why it doesn't happen. I'm trying to explain it to you.
No, I'll tell you why it doesn't happen. Look, we're not talking about we're not asking the government to pass a new law. Okay.
No.
What I'm asserting is this:
all of this conduct is already a felony. All of it.
But
now,
it's in everybody's mind, as you've talked about, and we all have talked about on the show. We got a dash here in a bit, but and who knows? Maybe you'll be back. But we talk about it on the show all the time. The generation, people younger than us, don't even realize that this is wrong.
Chief, if you don't enforce the government will not enforce the law.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm saying
yes, you are.
No, I'm not. I'm saying they don't. If you were to ask any, well, Ricky's here, but he probably doesn't want to. But if you were to say to people, boy, Walmart is going to, or Amazon is going to keep their prices really low, and they're going to do all this stuff, and as soon as they get enough people out of business, they're going to raise them up.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, if you walk into a bar where everybody's 35 or below, they're going to look at you and say, what's the problem with that? That's only good business.
Well, all right, so here's the thing, though. These acts that the entire medical system and essentially every physician, every doctor, every hospital administrator, every single pharmaceutical company and representative, all of them engage in it.
That's where you and I have a little bit of a disagreement, because the physicians are out of the loop. Here they are. They're totally out of the loop. They don't make any decision like that.
Well, but all these acts were declared a felony more than 100 years ago.
I did a lot of work on this. I'm with you. I could be ahead of you on this. Let me tell you something.
No, Chief, let me
know what I'm saying. One of Audrey's best friends, well, not best friends, but and knows this. She's been to the doctor, knows the guy. The guy's 65 years old. He's one of the last of the really good GPs.
Right.
They can't wait to get him out of their practice.
I know.
I mean, they don't want him around because he's liable to do something they don't want him to do.
Look, the guy that used to take care of my parents, he retired. He was an old Japanese dude, okay, and a physician, and actually a real physician.
Yeah.
not a button pusher. But here, he's gone now, right? He's dead. But, he's dead of old age. Like, it happens to everybody eventually. And the thing is, though, is that if you look at this, you have this and you have a situation where essentially the entire system is structured around acts that are felonies. Presenting somebody a bill and threatening to charge them 10 times as much money unless they buy your insurance is called extortion and racketeering, and it's a crime. And it's been a crime for a very long time. Now, if the government will not charge and prosecute those crimes, what remaining course of action exists?
They ignore it for so long that now it's such a big of a deal they can't do anything about it.
Well, what option to the American people?
Well, you're gonna go there, the revolution in the streets, but people don't even know what they're revolutioning against.
Well, I understand this, but you know what? We'd better figure it out, because guess what? It's bankrupting the country.
You're never gonna see. There's still a sandwich sign maker. You're not gonna see 1,000 people with sandwich signs walking down the street saying, if I go get an appendectomy, it costs me more than an insurance company pays for it. They don't even know what's happening, Carl.
I get that, Chief, but if we do not spend our time,
you and I know that,
educating people,
and we're trying, but I mean,
if it doesn't get fixed, and we're not talking about
Carl, we know. I mean, we got a day.
I'm not talking unsustainable over the next 10 to 20 years. I'm talking about it blows up this year.
I would agree with you, but in the perfect world. Not even perfect world, slightly imperfect world. No, but in a slightly imperfect world, if PTI was 200 people, which I don't know if I'd ever want to be that big, but if we were 200 people, 50 years ago, we could buy an insurance for babies born premature, somebody getting cancer, something like that. And we could buy an umbrella policy and totally self-insure the rest. Somebody went to the doctor, we'd write the check.
Right.
But because our rate was the same as the insurance company's rate, instead of going from somebody else to process all the paperwork, you just write the check. It's incredibly cheaper. It's more efficient. We all know that. But now we don't have a network. The network. That's why Blue Cross of Iowa doesn't sell insurance in Illinois. They'll tell you, we don't have the Illinois network. We have to pay what you pay. We don't want to do that. Duh.
Well, it is. But again, this kind of activity is illegal.
No, nobody wants to admit how bad it is and take a shot at it.
Well, if we don't fix it,
well, but we got two groups of people in this country to run the place. We got the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yep.
Democrats started a plan under Hillary. Nobody liked Hillary. Nobody liked Bill. So the Republicans basically said how crummy it was. I don't remember what was good or bad. Probably was halfway decent, and maybe not halfway decent.
It was horrible. I looked at it.
Okay, so but it was something. Now, George Bush's response: we're not going to do anything for 8 years. Okay, right. Then you come in with Obamacare, which left the cost piece out, let the insurance companies way too close in. We all know all that happened. And Trump had four years to fix it, and he didn't.
By the way, Obamacare took United Healthcare stock and multiplied its value by 20.
I get that. I mean, I'm saying it was all done. They didn't solve any of these problems. All they did was try and smooth the cost over more people.
Obamacare made it much worse because it took all the checks and balances out of people saying F you out of the system. Okay. And force me to pay for the guy that sits there and mainlines heroin all day.
Ricky, do we have Joel?
I don't see Joel in the meeting just yet.
As soon as he comes in, we'll keep going here for a few minutes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because Carl, how big of a project? I mean, do you think we've had two people run for president? What kind of a Trump's only got 4 years?
What?
All right, so he's essentially. I'm not saying a lame duck. I hope he can do some really good stuff. But he's got time. We don't have that much time.
Four years. He doesn't. He has 1 year, and then the election season starts again.
But, I mean, right. how does somebody – this is so endemic. How does somebody topple this? I mean, I think the only way
to – Throw some people in jail.
The only way you're going to do it, I think, is do it from the competitive side.
No, you throw people in jail for the price fixing and extortion.
I think that what you end up doing – you can do that. What you need to do is, if you're going to go get an MRI, you say there's people that'll do it for $500, and nobody goes to Northwestern and has it done for $6,000. Somehow or another, you and I would never do that, but insurance company will, because they want the more you increase the cost, the more you increase the profit. You and I know the drill. That's why Commonwealth. It's the same as Commonwealth Edison. They're priced as a monopoly. Commonwealth Edison. If you try and sue them, and they hire 48 attorneys at $1,000 an hour, that becomes a cost. They get paid for that. While you're fighting with your own dough. I mean, what's the logic in that? Except for them.
Well, except for them, right? I mean, I don't disagree with any of that. What I'm saying is that the answer to this problem. And the way that, and because you don't have 5 or 10 years to solve it, you got to fix it now. If you don't, on the current trajectory we're on, we don't have a $2 trillion deficit this year. We have a $6 trillion.
Without a doubt.
All right. Now, will the market put up with that? No, it won't. And by the way, if you look at this last run over the last month or so, in this Magnificent Seven. Okay, prices have continued to go up, kind of, sort of. They're still rounding over at the top a little bit. But the more ominous side of this is volume's down, and not a little.
We're gonna end up, if these guys ever get truthful, we're 2 or 3 months away from having a 1 or 2%, 1 or 1.25% tick in inflation in 1 month. And if they ever publish
if that happens, kaboom.
Oh, if that happens, all of a sudden people are going to have their come to Jesus moment.
Yes, they are.
Because right now, I mean, it's funny, you keep mentioning, I had a conversation with, he takes trips all over the world, so he liquidated a lot of his portfolios. Anyway, he was a customer for a long time, and now he just travels around. Great guy, and he was telling me about all the inflation, and he's talking about the same stuff, eggs, gas. That's not the issue that people are having right now. They've somehow come to deal with that one way or the other. Besides, gas isn't up that much. So they've come to deal with that. It's the thing you didn't... Oh, my God, I need something with my car. It's a grand.
Right.
It was $300 5 years ago. It's the stuff you don't even know about that's the problem.
Well, my daughter just ran into this. She had a wheel bearing that went bad. Okay, now on the Chevy front end, all right, it's a piece. Right, it takes 5 minutes to change it. It's 3 bolts. It comes off. I mean, you have to take caliper off first. Big deal. But literally, now these things were before the crazy. These things were $100 for the whole unit, right? With the Timken bearing in it and everything, high quality stuff, right?
another $250.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff, you know, it's the unexpected expense that's going to bury you.
Well, but I'm saying that's, I mean, now the part is $250.
Well, try and,
like, it still takes 20 minutes to change it. But I you know, and I'm like, I look at this and I'm like, you guys are out of, you know, but seriously, that's what it costs. And that's the inflation that people are not, you know, they're paying zero attention to.
Well, I didn't actually get them done last year, but there's a place in Chicago that I've had to replace. Place I live in is, you know, 100 years old, so I kind of enjoy fixing it up because it keeps me in tune with what regular people are doing, right? I'm not just, if I had a limousine, I wouldn't just be in it, right? I'm outside, I'm hauling the stuff. And I put windows on from time to time, and I found a place in Chicago where it's the, remember the place where the guys shut it down in one day on Goose Island, where Jesse Jackson was all over the owners and all this stuff? Well, the guys who worked there ended up forming their own place, like a co-op out, and I always buy the windows from them. They're so nice. They do a good job. It's all custom stuff. So my guy goes out there with the measurements, and they're 350, 400 a window, okay, which,
right.
And now I got to pay my guy to put them in, right? So, and he does a great job. So I end up, you know, cheaper than just about anybody. Last time I go, they went for the one picture window, two windows on the side combo, they want $1,900. I go, $1,900? What 2 years ago was $1,200. Yeah, right. Well, you know, I mean, I ended up pushing it off 2 years. I mean, and then, you know, then that's like a lot. It's 50% in a year and a half, for God's sake.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, look at what happened during the crazy. The cost of a roll of Romex,
okay, yeah,
went from like $100 to $300. All right. I mean, now it's back down. Now it's only $125.
But they're not all the way down.
Well, but I didn't say all the way. Yeah. You know, went from $100 to $300. Now it's $125. Okay. But wait a minute. That's still 25% increase, isn't it? You know.
I mean, it's so. I mean, but we're feeling it, and there's a little bit of pushback. I think the euphoria when any president changes that all stuffs everything's gonna be better. I don't know where the anchors that these people have. You know, maybe they can come in and shake up some stuff. Maybe RFK, if he doesn't shoot his mouth off too much and not get approved, maybe he can do something in that area. But nobody's even talking about the stuff we're talking about. Not to mention, Carl, I mean, in Chicago, I mean, Northwestern, all these places that are now not for profit. What do you mean not for profit? How does Northwestern, if they're going to charge somebody how many thousand dollars a night, how do they not have the money to pay their water bill, for God's sake? I mean, you know, I mean, we're reaching a point here where they sort of are for profit, aren't they?
I mean, well, this is the thing, is you know the way you get around this is, you know, all these legally bankrupt schemes, all right. But if nobody, but this, what it comes down to is this: the underlying scheme, all of this stuff, boils down to either extortion, racketeering go along with it because there's more than one person involved, illegal price fixing. All these things are criminal felonies. They're supposed to land you in the slammer for 10 years, and yet, gee, nobody ever goes to jail.
But how do we get from corruption? And I still remember my uncle who's been dead forever. You know, they were involved in the city big time. And he said, under Mayor Daley one, he goes, the corruption is at an acceptable level. There was never any thought among those old dudes that there was no corruption in human nature. Right?
Well, there's always corruption everywhere.
But the point is, it's, you know, the corruption is Uncle Billy needs a job. Okay, we'll make him a bridge tender or something. You know,
right.
He sits there. I mean, he has to show up. And God help him if he screws up, because then you get pissed at Billy because you recommended him, right? I know when I got recommended to be a janitor, the last thought in my mind was never do something wrong or came back on my uncle, for God's sake. I mean, I would never even dream of not showing up. I mean, I made absolutely sure I was the best janitor every school I ever was, because the last thing I want is if somebody did me a favor like that, they would come back at him. I mean, you know, so what? These guys, you know, people talk about, the Secretary of State, these people, these jobs. You know, he's got all these jobs, and somebody worked. Those are jobs nobody wants. I mean, not nobody. The people, I know some of the people who work there, but
It is in the basement of the State of Illinois building. It's hot as it hinges of hell. You deal with the public all day long. You sit there to one license after another. Those are jobs for people that, they go to work, they do the job they're supposed to do, and most of them are pretty darn pleasant. But God, those are jobs that we're not talking about working for Northwestern Medicine at the top tier. We're talking about everyday jobs that people that just absolutely have to work at these places. These are not great jobs.
You want to know something that's interesting? I moved here to Tennessee. It's the first time I've ever had an experience with dealing with the DMV related things that wasn't like pulling teeth out with no Novocaine. Okay? First time it's ever happened in my life. Every time, you know, I've had to go stand in line at the Daily Center to get tags renewed and whatever have you, right?
You know, I never had a problem with those people. But maybe I had to wait 10 minutes, but everybody was always pleasant as hell whenever I got there.
Well, I'm just saying, it's always, you know, it's always been a goat rodeo in terms of, you know, efficiency, right? Lines out the door, you know, whatever have
you. Well, of course, everybody went at lunchtime.
Well, okay, but yeah. You know what? So I go over there, I go over to the DMV. Now, they do the, unlike most states, here, it's two different places. Your license is at the Department of Homeland Security thing or whatever. It's a different office. Okay, it's down the road. You got to do the license first. I go in there, I get the driver's license, and it takes 5 minutes. You know, make sure you can see. Oh, you have the old one. Here's your identity documents to prove that, you know, you are who you say are. Well, guess what? You got a passport. You got your old driver's license, which is one of the real ID ones. Here you go. Take your picture. Done. All right. Then I go to the courthouse where they do the tags and the titles, and literally less than 5 minutes, I'm in and out of there.
Well, you can do that. You can do that in Orland. There's nobody in the place in Orland.
Well, but I'm saying I get my tags, I get my titles, no hassles. And oh, by the way, all three vehicles, a trailer and the two vehicles, $100.
We'll get a load of this. The Orland one, when Rauner was governor, he was all pissed off at the city because the city was Democratic, so he yanked all the places where you test for your emissions out of the city, so everybody in the city has to drive out to the burbs.
Has to drive out, right? Well, you know, we don't have that stupidity either.
He also yanked the, because this is before Keith Peacow was the mayor, who's been on the show. He's Republican, terrific guy, and a veteran and stuff. I mean, Audrey knows him pretty well, but before him, I think was a Democratic mayor. So Rauner yanked the Secretary of State's office out of the Orland City Hall, where there was some lady sat there. You walked in and she took care of you in 2 minutes. Oh no, you can't have it there. They must have been paying rent to Orland, so they didn't want to do that because they were Democrats. This is insanity.
It's nuts. But that's the thing, is that, I mean, we look at all these little elements of corruption, okay, end up, you know, I mean, when I used to have to go do this in Florida, it was the take a number thing, right? Yeah. Go sit in the waiting area.
Ricky, do we have Kenny?
Kenny, yes. Is on.
Okay, Carol, how about we talk to you on Friday? And
you bet.
So everybody, you got back with not even a bruise, some skiing. Good for you.
Hey man, I had an absolutely fabulous time.
Great. So. Well, let's go to Kenny. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You sound loud and clear, like if you're going to give a political speech.
Well, I am just packing up. I have to go to New York City for a couple of days, so I'm just getting my stuff ready to go. But yeah, no, I'm good. Everything's good.
Well, good for you. What do you make of what's going on with the Bitcoin and the market? And you getting nervous at all here? I am a little bit.
Continues to be, the Trump trade rally. Absolutely. And yesterday's announcement at Mar-a-Lago by Masayoshi Son about that $100 billion investment in tech projects in the United States, creating 100,000 new jobs, only continues to ignite everything tech. You saw what happened to Bitcoin. It's now trading at 108,000 or 107,000. Ethereum is up. XRP is up. You saw cybersecurity names up. You saw quantum computing names, which is, you know, the latest thing that people are talking about, quantum computing and the role it's going to play in AI. And so then you get an announcement from Masayoshi Son that, you know, is ready to commit $100 billion. Trump's not even president yet, and he's making these deals that
you
will
think
benefit the U.S. economy.
The,
so
the first one of these deals that comes through is the first one of these deals that comes through.
Correct. That's true. And so they all commit, blah, blah, blah. But let's just see what happens. But yes, at the moment, it appears as if it's going down, you know, the right path. I think he's going to commit Yoshi's son. But I think, you know, when you talk about the other deals, you know, whether it's, you know, tax cuts and all that stuff, that's going to depend.
No, I'm talking about the deal in Kenosha didn't work. The one, the what was a something com and Foxconn, the one in Pennsylvania didn't work. I mean, does any of these things ever, do they ever say, what they ever do what they say they're going to do? They get all the benefits, and they don't do crap.
Well, which one are you talking about? The one in Intel, the one in Ohio with Intel. That's a 2025 or 2026 project by the time it's done. That's when.
That one I think is okay, and I think the one in Arizona is somebody's doing is percolating along pretty good too.
Yeah.
But they totally blew up Kenosha.
Kenosha have blown up, yes, correct.
And the same thing happened in Pennsylvania or Ohio, wherever it was.
Why that blew up. Do you remember why that? I don't know why that blew up.
They just didn't show up. And the weird part was they had done the same thing in Pennsylvania, Ohio. And then the people in Wisconsin ignored the fact that they screwed them and just did it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see what happens. I mean, listen, the market clearly was excited yesterday, I think, on tech at least, the tech space, because everything tech kind of rallied yesterday, I think. Partly on the back of that, partly on the back of the idea that they think rate cuts are coming, partly on the back that they think, you know, it's a new world. Look, AI is it's this new AI revolution that we're in. You can't argue it. You can't say it's not here. It's going to continue to be here, and I think it's going to continue to fuel markets certainly going forward in the U.S. economy.
Why should I think anything different, being a cynic, which I don't want to be because I'd like to be in the right investments for my people. Right. Why do you think it's any different than the three-year euphoria about the cloud or the five-year euphoria about China?
Well, listen, I don't think the euphoria about the cloud is over. I think that's very much a reality. Look what the cloud has done in terms of changing the way people use the internet, people use the cloud, people use technology, right? The cloud has been a massive, massive game changer. I think AI clearly is going to be a game changer. Quantum computing is going to continue to only fuel that, the game changer. So I'm all in, right? I'm not all in that I'm crazy and chasing everything, but I'm all in the sense that, okay, these sectors have to have a position in the portfolio, right? You strategically add to them. You don't go chasing them.
Well, how do you not chase them? They go up every day.
Well, okay, but I'm not chasing. There are some people that are clearly chasing, and here's what I think is chasing. I think it's the end of the year. I think you had a lot of asset managers, big money managers, that had been waiting for the fall kind of pullback, which never came, and then you had the election, and then you've had nothing but the market go straight up, and you got a lot of these guys that are going, oh, shit, I got to take some of this money and put it to work. I got to show that we own these names, and I think that's why you're getting this push. I think that's going to change in January. Not that it's going to be a disaster, but I think once the calendar changes, the year is over, they're going to mark their books to the market on December 31st. They're going to send out quarterly statements and year-end statements. They're going to show everybody what a great job they did, blah, blah, blah. But then January starts a new year. Everything gets wiped clean and everyone gets started over, and that's when I think now.
Here's my concern, and you know well, we're both money managers, so our job is to worry for our people, right?
Correct.
Basically. And to get in the right spots, and if it starts going the other way, to be protected and not be too protected when it goes up, where you lose too much money being protected, right? So it's always the game, or the art more than the game. It's more the art. All the stuff that was the world was changing in 2000, Kenny. Everything that was going to take the world forward ended up taking the world forward. It didn't mean that Cisco was worth $65.
No, correct.
Now, that my concern here is when all those companies got to the point where they were 10, 11, 12 times revenue, not PE, yeah, all of a sudden it got real heavy and really bad things happened.
Okay.
And right now we're at those numbers again, only worse. The difference is the companies now are bigger.
Understood. I agree with you, which is why I'm remaining cautious. I got new money that wants to put to work. It's sitting in a government money market fund at the moment, earning 4.25% while we wait. Because I agree with you.
By the way, we just put a bunch in the government yesterday too. Did you go to the auction? We did.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. That stretch, which is why I've been saying, look, I don't see why they need to cut rates tomorrow. I've been adamant about there's no reason to cut rates. The data is not suggesting it. And by the way, if the data plays out the way that the economists and street analysts are saying, they expect inflation to tick up. It was going to tick up on either side, no matter who won. So it's not a Trump thing or a Harris thing.
Here's my read on the rate cut. You know, I'm always a little different because I'm a dyed-in-the-wool monetarist, right?
Yeah.
There, they're not going to, how do I say this without sounding like a total idiot? they're not going to cut rates tomorrow. They're going to acknowledge that they already have.
You think they're not cutting rates tomorrow?
No, no. What I said is, look at your treasury rates. We just went to get stuff, you and I, together, managing money. We went yesterday to the auction for people. Yep. My brother did. And we got people their three-month to six-month treasury, whatever they wanted. Now, they've been pouring money into the system again now for 5 months, which they have no business doing if they're fighting inflation. They're not. They're not. They're popping the wealth up again for the 1%. That's what they're doing. The action of putting money into the system has dropped the rate from 5.25 down to 4.5.
Right.
And so their rate now is still what, 5? So their announced rate is 5. It's really 4.5. So all they're doing is acknowledging that they've already done it. They're not. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. They're acknowledging that they've already done it, but they are going to, in fact, tomorrow they're going to say we're cutting rates by 25.
Yeah, but only the people who don't look at the numbers think that's actionable. It's not.
Okay.
It's an admission of what they did.
Okay, and that's fine. I hear you, right? But the point is. That's the mindset. People are waiting from the. They're waiting to have him, tell you why they're cutting it, and they're confident that they've slayed inflation. I don't think they've slayed inflation at all. You and I have had this. I actually think inflation is going to rear its ugly head next year, and that the Fed's going to end up raising rates, which I think is a complete disaster. Which is why they shouldn't do anything. They should hold rates steady today. I think they've already cut too much, considering where we are. But they've done what they've done, so I don't think they should do any more. But that's me.
If they ever gave us an honest number,
we would
see a 1.2 number or something in January and in CPI, and that would cause all kinds of problems. But that's the truth.
Correct. I agree, but we're not going to get
how long can we pee in people's boots and tell them it's raining? I mean, we have an entire population that knows the numbers are wrong.
Right.
I mean how long? They've done it pretty far. Did you see who's the guy who wrote the thing for CNBC? There's a guy there who writes a real nice summary of the CPI probably 2-3 days after it comes out every month. I should remember the guy's name because I read it.
Leisman?
No, some other dude. But he's talking about last year, car insurance was up 12.7%.
Yeah.
Now, that's the stuff people talk about eggs. Okay, you buy eggs a lot, but your car insurance you pay every month. I mean, was car insurance, vet bills were 12%. Without the care of old people, 12%. What the hell was the other one? Bottom line is, don't get a dog, don't drive a car, and don't get old.
100%. I agree with you.
So we're talking about things that people absolutely have to do are over 12%. And these guys are talking, we're 2.4. No, you're not. What's the matter with you?
No, you're not. I agree with you, and I are on the same page. 1,000%. It's wrong. And it's baloney. And you and I... every day, and you and I and all these listeners every day understand it, because we're living in this world, we're paying these bills, and so anyone with any smarts in their head is saying, this isn't right. It doesn't feel like this is what happens. What needs to happen is we need to have a recession, because a recession will straighten it all out, right? Because prices will fall. Yes, people will be out of work. I get it. The economy will struggle for a little bit, but guess what? That's what needs to happen in order for it to reset. It does. You know it. I know it.
I don't know that. This. I think it's a little different. You know what this? God. You know what this reminds me of, Kenny? I don't know how much you've read. Don't. Please don't read it, because all it does is make you crazy. Read the serious history of the 1920s.
Yeah.
And how everybody was convinced it was the Roaring Twenties, but only for a few.
That's right.
And this reminds me. I don't think in the last 10 years, 85% of the country has advanced at all.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you.
But right now, the government is worried about the 5%. What are we going to do if the market cracks 50%? Most people, there's kind of you have an IRA. Yeah, you care about it. A lot of people, an awful lot of people don't have IRA. In 2000, how many people did it actually hurt? If you were in the markets, it nailed you pretty good. I don't know that if the market corrects 30% in Bitcoin. Of course, Kenny, it's hard for me to bitch about a stock having 12.4 price to revenue when we have a stock that has no revenue and no sales and it's $108,000. I mean, what is? Have you ever seen an artificial stock? At least with a tulip, you got a tulip.
Yeah, right. It is absolutely that. It feels like it could be the, you know, the whole Dutch tulip bulb thing. But I will say the only reason I don't think so is because I do think that there's a real use case for the blockchain and for Bitcoin. It's clear they've made that clear. So I don't think it's the same. Now, do I think it's stretched? I do think it's a little bit stretched. Do I own some? I do. Do I own a lot? No, never enough. Right.
Well, why? Name me a person who owns it other than the fact that it's going up. It'll sing their praise. Name me a person who can even tell me what it is.
Well, there's a number of people that can tell you what it is. The guy, Anthony Pompliano, you should actually have him on your show, Anthony Pompliano.
But I'm saying, is it just a way for scoundrels around the world to get around every sort of monetary law?
Well, you know, that's the way maybe it feels right now, but I think that's going to change too. I think that, you know, you're going to start to see, because look, it is in fact real, in my opinion. And so now there's going to be real kind of regulation around it, right? The industry wants regulation. I think, you know, Trump's, and I think that's, I think they're celebrating the fact that Gensler's out, right? He was very anti, he was doing everything he could to block it and to create difficulty. I think the new guy that Trump has nominated is very friendly towards crypto regulation. He wants to see it regulated. He wants to see it become, you know, a real asset in terms of regulation.
Why, let me ask you this. Why do we need it?
I think we need the blockchain.
You're not a shareholder in the blockchain.
No, I understand that, but the Bitcoin, the currencies are a result of having this blockchain, right? So the blockchain came first, and now the Bitcoins come next, and so now it creates. What does it create? It creates stability, I guess, in how people feel about their own situation. They can't come in, and you know, it's privacy. Not everyone knows what you're doing. You can control it. Although the part that bothers me is that if there's a Federal Reserve digital currency, which I'm sure there will be, then they're going to actually be able to watch everything you do. They're going to see exactly where your money is, how you're spending it, where it goes, and if they want to take some, they can go and take it.
Well,
I guess
it seems to me that if it gets quote regulated,
yeah,
every single rule that affects other stuff, which I think is a little encumbersome, to be honest with you,
right?
I mean, there's no way that. You're going to have, if Kenny Polcari had an account at PTI and we sent the statements to your house and get them back 3 months in a row, if we can't find you, your money's going to the state. You can't just take somebody's dough. Yet in Bitcoin, if you forget your password, they want me to believe that somehow along the line that nobody's ever going to steal that money? Bull bleep.
Or that you've lost it. Yeah. I think that's the part that needs to be corrected. Because right now, if I lose my password, I guess I can't get my Bitcoin. That's the deal, right?
Well, and the idea is nobody will ever get it. I don't buy that for a second. There's got to be somebody that knows the idea that it'll be there forever. That's bull. Somebody somewhere is going to figure out that this Kenny Polcari guy, you know, was in a plane that got shot down or something. It's 10 years from now. We're going to go get it and see if he ever shows up.
Right. Yeah, no, I hear you. Look, it's going to be an interesting time for sure. There's no doubt about it in terms of, you know, where we're going, not only with Bitcoin, but where we're going with regulation and where we're going with technology. So let's just sit tight, see where that goes. But for right now, I'm in on technology. I'm not chasing it, but I'm in. And on any pullbacks, I'll continue to go in.
You know what I have a problem with, Kenny? We'll let you go here. But you know what I have a problem with about this announcement from the Trump thing, and Kevin's texted me about Foxconn was like really good guys or something, which I don't believe. But I want the world that you and I know, the stock market, the way the stock market is there. It's a secondary market, so people who raise money the way they're supposed to raise money here and do business and start businesses in a healthy manner can go to the stock market, they go to the bond market, and they get financing, and that's what we're supposed to do. Now it seems like everybody who's going to do something is some big name bazoo, runs by the president or some governor, and they come out with some sort of plan where they get nothing but benefits right out of the gate. And how the hell do you, that they totally go around the normal system that you and I know, and how does a regular person compete with that? And I don't think You know, every one of these a month or one of these every 6 months is what makes the economy. What makes the economy is people getting an idea, being able to find investors and do it the way. This way is not the right way, I don't think.
Well, listen, I agree with you in the way that the economy works, but I also have to be, you have to be honest. We're in a new century. The world is not the same as it was. Lots going on. This AI revolution is changing the world. And so, you know, what I realize is you can't really, it's progress, right? You can't fight the progress. Look, you and I know, I fought progress all along during the 90s and early 2000s, and trying to convert the New York Stock Exchange to automation, and I never thought it was going to work, and blah, 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 and how is this possible? Suddenly now, it's completely automated. All the people are gone.
Well, that's right. And
so
now
the
question
is, necessarily work the way it does.
But the question is it working? It works. Yeah, stuff trades every day. But I don't really want this happened in 1990. I was over in Europe giving a lot of lectures, Kenny. I don't want a fascist economic system here where every industry has four companies with their nose up the ass of government and nobody else can break in.
That's where we're heading. Well, I think that's where we would have been at had the other side won. I actually don't think that's the case under this administration. I think they're much more about, yes, we want to regulate, but we want to let free enterprise happen.
He had four people come down to Mar-a-Lago, or five or six, give them $1 million, and now he loves their companies. What do you mean it's going to be better?
He loves their companies, or they love him. They're all trying to get in bed with him because clearly he won with a big mandate. They pushed and pushed and pushed against him, and now that he won and they won big, they're all going, "Oh shit, we better get in bed with him," which is exactly what they all did.
So we're gonna put Elon Musk, who's got a $9 billion gift from government, gonna go out there and tell people how they're wasting money. are we in bizarre world or what?
Well, he's going to tell the government how they're wasting money.
They wasted money by giving him I understand, but they wasted money by giving him $9 billion.
Well, okay. Listen, we can go back and debate about what they offered him and what they gave him to build that company, all that stuff. Yes, I agree. We could do that. But they did it. That's over. Right, I mean, you can't take that back. But we've done that in a lot of places. Right? Maybe not to the extent that happened with him.
At least,
but look, the technology also, the world changed. Right, he just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
He wouldn't be in business if he didn't get any money from the government.
Well, okay, I understand, but that's what I mean. He was in the right place at the right time. We gave him the money, and then he ran with it. You know, what are you going to do? You're gonna ping the guy because we gave him the money and he ran with it?
All I'm saying is that. If you went out and bought a car 5 years ago, you had to give money to him. Why?
I bought a car 5 years ago. I didn't give my money to him.
Treat it.
I didn't buy it.
Treat it. Whoever you bought it from, you had to buy a carbon credit from him.
Yes. You had to buy the car.
I'm saying, but then part of your purchase price went to him.
You mean because of the credits?
Yeah.
But that's something that the government, I didn't design that, you didn't design that, the government designed it, they gave it to him, it was a gift. And he ran with it again, he ran with it and created something. You can't fault him for taking advantage of what the government gave him.
I'm not, but I'm saying the first thing you ought to do is make sure that never happens again if he wants to make the government more efficient.
Yeah, that's fine, I'm with you on that, so let's make sure it doesn't happen again. But in the meantime, you know, him and Vivek and this Doge thing, it's going to be very interesting to see how they go through this and how much pushback they're going to get. I'm sure you and I both know there's massive wasteful spending. Come on.
All he's got to do is walk in there and pick up the Simpson-Bowles manual and read it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I am not against anything efficiency in government, and we got to do something in this medical area. I mean, Carol and I talk about it all
right.
the time. I mean, it's
yeah, that, 100%.
That's where all the problems are, is right there.
Yeah, 100%. And look, and you know, and you hate to say it, but this kid that shot the guy from UNH, you know, it's a level of frustration. Not that you ever want to see that happen at all, and I'm not condoning it at all. But to your point, that's how people are feeling. They're feeling helpless, right? They're feeling like they got no control.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yes, that needs.
And the more they pour money in, where some people are so rich, the $100 bill they don't want to waste to light their cigars. They got so many of them, they don't know what to do with it. A lot of stuff has to happen, Kenny. I think that there's a chance Trump might do some really good things. I just hope he doesn't degrade into fighting, you know, spending all day fighting about daylight savings times or something. Who gives a crap? Let's do this other stuff first.
I agree with you, and I happen to think that he's not going to waste his time on the bullshit. I think he is going to try to move ahead and
I hope so. You know, he's not my favorite person, but doesn't mean he can't do a good job.
No, well, 100%. And whether you like him or not, the fact is he is who he is, and now, you know, he is who he is as the president of the country, so either you support him or you don't, and you can support him without liking him because you're going to support what you hopefully think he's going to do.
How many presidents would you and I ever want to have a drink with? Any? There might be a few.
Reagan. I would love to have had a drink with Reagan.
Maybe. Jerry Ford, maybe. Actually, you know, I bet...
Jerry Ford.
I bet, what's his name? Bush is very affable.
Junior. George Bush, yeah, probably.
We could talk about baseball. He owned a team.
he didn't own the team. I was on the floor of the exchange. Yeah. I was on the floor of the exchange when he came down to the New York Stock Exchange. It was very cool. I was also there when Reagan rang the bell with Mikhail Gorbachev. That was really cool.
Well, you know, Bob Dole came down the floor, and somebody snuck and put those little trailers on his heels. He was walking around with
them. The cowboy spurs. Yeah. Oh my god, how did a kid talk about the stories. Oh my god, it was unbelievable.
But he came by and he shook everybody's hand.
Listen, when they came down, any one of them, you know, Reagan, whatever, they all came around. They walked right on the floor. They talked to the, you know, to the brokers on the floor. They talked to the people on the floor. Yeah, they were very, I mean, there was Secret Service around them, but they didn't. Stop them from engaging.
No. You know,
look what Trump did the other day. He did the same thing. Now there's no one left on the floor, but the people that are there, there's like 100 people left on the floor. There were 5,500 when I was working there. So, you know, 5,400 jobs are gone. But Trump went around along with J.D. Vance and whoever else he brought down there. They're all very engaging. So it was all very exciting. I was kind of bummed that I wasn't there. I think that would have been a really cool moment to have been there.
Well, you know what, what was interesting about Bob Dole is that, you know, the guy never smiled, right? Well, the reason why he didn't smile is he had shrapnel in his face, and he couldn't. When you saw him in person, you could tell he had the shrapnel, that he had a little bit of a deformity there, so you knew why he couldn't smile. I mean, I always thought he was a good guy. I really did. I had no problem with him.
Bob Dole was a good guy. He was kind of vanilla. Yeah. There was nothing really sexy or exciting about him, right? In terms of, he was vanilla, and it was fine. A vanilla president is okay, and that's what he represented in my mind.
Well, anyway, Kenny, we'll let you go and have a nice trip to New York. Travel safe, and we'll get to
listen. And are you on next week or no? Next
no,
Tuesday?
No, Tuesday we are. Yeah, not Wednesday and Wednesday.
Okay, so Tuesday. So I'm going to talk to you next Tuesday.
Yes, you will.
All right, so I'll get to say Merry Christmas next Tuesday.
Absolutely. SP Futures down 28 and NASDAQ Futures down 77. Do we have a Big Hal? We'll go right to Hal if he's here.
Yes, we do. Hey, good morning, Tom.
How are you? We'll do our break at the bottom of the hour. We're engaging with Kenny.
Oh, that was fun. Listen to you guys.
Kenny's a guy from the New York Stock Exchange. He was there forever. I still think that this all these dark pools and stuff is a bad idea. This stuff should be thrown on these. I like trading where you trade with other people more than you trade with dark pools. That's just me. And I don't like the payment for order flow. I never will. You know, we talked about it with Carl last week, actually with John Moore, that one of the things with payment for order flow and one of the things why I love doing the show is that everything is the same as everything else, in my opinion. I mean, I could never be a CNBC guy where you read one report and then you read the next report where it's obviously something is connected but you never mention the connection. I mean, my problem with payment for order flow is you as the customer, what you think is the customer, you buying and selling securities or options, whatever you're doing, you think you're the customer, but you're not paying, you're getting paid by the other side. Well, you are no longer the customer, even though you're foolish enough to think you are. And I think that's kind of what's happening with American politics. Is the voters still are foolish enough to think that they are the customer? Well, they are on one day, you know. But once you get past that, you're not paying these guys. Other people are. They I mean, Big Pharma is the customer to the politician.
Well, that's why the market system is so beautiful, because at any moment in time, the public can vote against a company if it does wrong. Whereas, you know, with a president, you know, you're stuck with the guy for 4 years, or your senator, you're stuck with him for 6 years. You can't just fire him, right? You have to wait. And by the time the election rolls around, if it's a Senate race, you know, people may have forgotten the wrong the guy did to you, right? Well, so yeah, that's why the market system is so superior to the political system.
Well, but the political system has to have something. And I think what you need, what has to happen, and well, for it to straighten out, there's a few things the Constitution, I didn't say, I won't say messed up on, but didn't anticipate. I think they knew very well, the guys sitting around in the room, because they were all whatever age they were, and I'm sure they had all it hurts that they you could fix today. They weren't hurt, you know, they were all hurting back then. I don't think they anticipated the corporation never dying, where people do.
Yeah, that's a relatively new.
So the idea that
right
that you and I being the nefarious dudes that we are, could show up and somehow or another from Vermont or New Hampshire figure out a way to, you know, that for us to get control of, you know, 535 people plus the president plus the Supreme Court would really be a tough do for two guys, and you know, that lived to be 50 like they did they used to. I mean,
Murray Rothbard writes about a gentleman that worked for the railroads, and he would go. I think he visited Washington D.C. one season, and he walked around with a bag full of cash. Literally, it was passing out money to all these senators and representatives to assure that the legislation went in his way. So, I mean, it's still. I mean, it was around.
Well, I mean, probably not like it is today. People don't change. That part I get. But I'm saying now the idea of the people in Vermont influencing an election in South Carolina, I don't think those guys ever anticipated that, because it took you how long to get from Vermont?
Well, I think
South
a lot
Carolina?
Of the Republic, not capital R, but a lot of the Republican little R institutions have been eroded. Like, for example, the state legislatures used to pick the senator, and when we went away from that and we adopted the rule where the people of the state pick their senators, I think that right there transitioned our system from Republican to kind of state fascism, because, you know, the money that comes into these Senate races is not money from the people of that state. It's national money. It's, you know, money coming from all different states. I don't think, you know, North Carolina senator is getting a lot of money from North Carolinians, right? He's getting, and if the legislatures were still picking the senators, which they do in the European Union, right? The nation states pick their members. They pick the representatives.
Well, they're elected.
Of the highest. They have a bicameral system too. They have the ones that the people elect, and then they have the higher chamber, which are people.
Yeah, but nobody
who
pays the attention to the House of Lords anymore. They're
but
useless.
I'm talking about the European Union itself. Right. There's two legislative bodies. There's the group that the people vote for, and there are the people that the state nominates to the European government.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we constantly jibe back and forth with the various people on the show, they're trying to find a way, and I'm not accusing you of this, of weaseling around the system, where okay, we should have term limits, or we should have, or going back to the state. All it does, if I'm one of these companies dishing out this cash, and I'm essentially buying government.
Is it really them buying government, or is it the politicians selling their services?
Well, what's the difference? Same thing.
But I think the focus
there's a briber and a bribee, right?
Yeah, but everybody always talks about the evil corporation buying off the politicians. And that focus makes it seem like it's corporate's fault. But there's very little talk of these politicians selling access and selling their services.
Some of it is not, and this is what
I mean, because these politicians are not. They're not unwilling participants.
Well, but I mean, some of it is our, meaning people on the show and people like us, our collective stupidity. Okay, I did one of the few times.
Yeah, the collective can be very stupid, that's
well,
for sure.
You know, what is a camel? A horse designed by committee, right? Right? I mean, duh. One day I got some really negative feedback on the show, which I don't normally do, really. I mean, somebody won't like my point of view versus Kevin's or something. Well, that's fine. That's good radio. And Kevin and I work it out the next show. It's not, or Carl, I mean, that's what we do. We love each other. We banter. You're the same way. You never learn anything from somebody who agrees with you, right?
Oh, no. You have to have that exchange of different opinions.
But I said, you know, if we really gave a crap, a lot of it is access. And I knew a lobbyist when I was 15 years old or 18 years old for Allstate. He says, a lot of it is just education. He was with Allstate Insurance. He said, there'll be a bill, and there's a piece in there that's, you know, somebody snuck in there or whatever they did. It's horrible for the insurance. It makes no sense. I go to this guy, that guy, that guy, and I say, hey, on page, 48 in this bill, look at this thing. The guy goes, "Wow, I didn't even know that was in there." I mean, a lot of it becomes education, that you have to be mindful of what somebody's slipping in there that harms your business.
Anytime a bill or a piece of legislation, a bill, is written, I'm always thinking, well, it wasn't written by the person sponsoring the bill. It was written by people outside the political system that are going to benefit from it, right?
Probably.
And so that's just, I'm thinking these politicians that engage in that thing, which probably is a lot of them, probably are the ones, maybe, I'm just, throwing this out there, maybe they're the ones that hire somebody to write their term paper in college, right? Well, because that's kind of what's going on.
But it also is, those are the people, some guy came in here, he became a client, but of course the dude was a serious guy. God, hell, you should have been here. The serious guy that knew a lot about nuclear reactors and the electrical company size, not the size on the ship.
Yeah.
And he was involved in a lot of these citizens' utility things where they'd fight Commonwealth Edison for something. And he said, you wouldn't believe, because we have to put up our own money, or people put it up and they hire me to be like their expert, right? So, and he was an older dude. God, he was probably in his mid-70s. This was a long time ago. He goes, and I still, I worked in these things all my life. I'm an expert on this stuff, or pretty much an expert, if there is such a thing. He goes, and I'm part of this group, and there'll be a proposal for a rate increase, which there always is, Commonwealth Edison, right? And all of a sudden, he goes, we'll fight it. And the people have to put up money to hire me, to hire a couple of attorneys. He says, but if you go down there, the ICC, Illinois Commerce Commission, you go into the office, and there's always a person or two from Commonwealth Edison or People's Gas or somebody sitting in there BSing with the guy, even donuts and coffee.
Of course.
They're constantly there. It's not this.
Wouldn't you be there? Right. Well, that's kind of like what Elon Musk. Democrats are going to give me a bunch of money to build electric vehicles. Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah. So he says, you walk in and they look at you like, who the hell are you? he says, you sit down and they're like, wait a minute. So my point of that show the one day that I got so much heat for, if we really gave a crap and had extra money, we would have a Stocks and Jacks, lobbying firm or fund or something, where every time, somebody, Elon Musk sticks $1,000 in Dick Durbin's left ass pocket, we shove $1,000 in the right pocket and say, we don't want to do that.
We don't know if he's making that payment, well, right?
These guys just gave $1 million to Trump for inaugural. Come on. Nobody writes $1 million check if you're not getting something for it. I know I'm too long here, but let me finish my point regarding, if you don't let people, if you say, okay, you can't give it to the senator, or you're going to, all you're doing, if I'm a traitor, which I was, all I'm going to say, it's known as a workaround. Guess what? I now start giving money, because I read something a couple years ago how the drug companies, just in case you might have term limits or something like that, they're starting to give money further down the chain. They're actually giving it to people in state legislatures who might grow up to be senators or representatives someday. So they're dropping their money way down. So make sure they include everybody.
Well, it happened in Utah. In Utah, there was a bill being proposed that would allow basically a voucher system where parents could take money out of the education fund if they put their kids into like a private school. And guess who the advocates for the public school system did? They gave contributions to both Democrats and Republicans, and that was defeated. I was disappointed because we were choosing not to send our kids to the government schools, and we were paying tuition in our property taxes to the state, and we're paying tuition at a private school. It was killing us financially.
Everybody in Chicago has done this for 100 years. Goes to Catholic school. There used to be 300,000 people in Catholic schools here. Every one of those people paid twice.
Yep. And that shouldn't be the case. I think we should follow the Swedish model, but that's not going to happen.
That's a Canadian model. Same thing. Your money follows you wherever the place is accredited.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if it's a private school or if it's a charter school. The other thing we need to do with the public school system is get rid of the thought monopoly. The state shouldn't be telling schools what they can and cannot teach. Parents will choose the schools that are best suited for their kids, and you'll see schools popping up everywhere that.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with in the first 8 grades. And reason why I say this is my.
Well, but if you lived in New York, I think you might think differently, because in New York they're trying to make the Jewish schools be like.
No, I'm talking about something much simpler. I'm talking about. The reason why I say it is my aunt's uncle's mother, well, she graduated high school, but the rest of them didn't. They all were read, write, add, subtract. Anything, they were pretty well.
Yeah, but
set
I don't up. Think that I don't think that's going on in a lot of.
Well, that's
schools.
What I'm saying. If I'm going to give
even at the elementary school,
level. I know if I'm given by 8th grade, I want kids to be able to read, write, know some physics, know some history, and do some math. You got to be able to. If I'm giving you money, you got to do that for me at least. You know.
I don't think that's going on today, Tom.
I don't think a lot of these kids have any idea what civics is or anything like that.
Yeah, they don't even know. I mean, honestly, I had a student in college when I was teaching in New York. This student didn't know what a comma was, and that person had graduated from a New York City public school.
Everybody needs to, in their lifetime. Everybody needs to spend the miserable 4th grade, where for an hour a day you diagram sentences and stuff. As much as it's miserable, everybody needs to take that beating, for lack of a better term.
Well, my kids
God, that I hate it. But I could diagram a sentence to this day, so whatever.
Yeah, my kids were diagramming sentences at Challenger School in Utah. When we put Joe into a public school in second grade, in first grade, in New York City, PS 217, his homework was write the letter X 3 times. Literally, that was his homework.
You're kidding.
And when he was in preschool, in kindergarten, at just a year earlier, he had learned like 800 of his phonics. They don't teach phonics anymore. They don't teach diagramming sentences.
I don't think
anymore.
If you ask most people that below the age of 20, they wouldn't know what phonics was.
Yeah, there's like, I don't know, 880 of them, right? And I learned them when I was in. I didn't know what they were.
We were never that big on phonics. I'll tell you what, it's all over if you take Latin. Good Lord.
Yeah. But that's what needs to happen, is the state needs to get out of the business of telling schools what to teach, because what they do is they force the private schools and the charter schools to be like the public schools, who are in the business of keeping the kids uneducated. And I'm not saying all public schools are bad. I'm just saying when you have a government-protected monopoly, you don't have to cater to the customer. You don't have to – you only cater – it's set up where you cater to the government, the organization.
It ends up being, oh boy, I'm going on a limb here. It ends up being almost fuels the fire of racism, classism, you name it. Because if somebody,
well, it does, it creates institutional racism. I mean,
well, if somebody thinks he contributed $25,000 a year to some kid's education, and all of a sudden the kid gets on TV and he's 16 and he can't even talk, they're wondering, what did I just spend my money on?
The kids in these inner city public schools in like New York City and Maryland, Baltimore, they are being set up for failure.
They're being set up to
live a life of crime.
How much of
they're
that,
not getting out the job skills.
Hell, how much of that is school versus family? I don't know that as much as I thought my grammar school did a terrific job. I don't know if they didn't have the parents behind them. I'm not so sure they could have done that job. And I don't know what I talked to a
lady.
Well,
to me, it's all, they're all symptoms of the government trying to be the dad in family.
But there are no dads in the neighborhood. That's what I'm getting to. There's no family.
The young women who get pregnant or have kids out of wedlock, they're not going to marry the boyfriend. They're not going to marry the baby's father, because the baby's father probably graduated from a public school who can't read or do math, and he doesn't have any job skills that are valuable enough to get a job at a living wage set by the state or the city of Baltimore. So the best outcome, the best marriage for these young women with kids out of wedlock is to marry the state, is to be a dependent on the state.
Well, I think there's a certain amount of personal responsibility. I had dinner with a lady a few years ago.
But if you're a child, especially a daughter of a household, which is a single parent household, depend on the state, and having to use food stamps, you're more than likely to embrace that lifestyle.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I also think that none of these drugs were around
the state
when we were in school.
The state creates this dependency.
I don't buy that. I think people choose their own morality. There's no doubt that people can how you work your welfare system can work to separate families. I agree with you 100%. It's not being done properly.
Well, I think you had to read more.
Some guy runs around and has seven trophy kids, that's on him. I didn't do that. That's on him. Yeah. As my mother used to say, people should take care. People took care of their own kids and their own dogs, you wouldn't have any problems.
Exactly. If people took care of the brother that was homeless,
yeah,
or the dad that was just getting out of jail, if people took care of them, we wouldn't have these issues.
Well,
but they
don't, and that's
the
problem.
The cost has been shifted to the government.
Well,
and it creates all kinds of moral hazards.
The government has had to pick up. Government can deal with. We got to get a break here. But government can deal with two or three out of a thousand being knuckleheads. Whether you're you break the law, or whether you somehow you can't get a job for whatever reason, you can deal with it at a certain level. When it gets to be a huge level, I don't know that you can deal with 50-60% of babies in a whole area being out of wedlock. I mean, how can you deal with that?
Yeah.
On any kind of a scale.
Well, the programs get spread further and further and further, and there's a reduction in the benefits per person, right?
Well, I think something has to happen, and I don't know what the...
But anytime government gives people a subsidy, like Elon Musk, for example, or a single parent
the same subsidy was available to you, and you take care of your kids. If you didn't, it's on you. It's not the government. They're just trying.
Yeah,
to
but make, what happens? But what happens, Tom, is now people are spending somebody else's money, and when that happens, you're not a very good steward of that money. You make poor decisions, and in economics, we call that.
Somebody's starving. Okay, as a government, you're going to give them some dough because you don't want them starving. Now you'd rather have them be working. Somebody somewhere is going to say, I guess if I can get enough to where I can eat from the government, I'll never go to work. But most people, I think, don't think that way. I mean, if they do, then that's where the problem is. S&P future down 22, and NASDAQ future down 50. I mean, you and I could go on welfare and probably hang, I don't know, I guess we could live somewhere. I don't know where, but we don't want to do that, right?
Well, Tom, I had students when I was my first time around at NCA&T, North Carolina A&T State University. I was teaching a macro class, and we were talking about government assistance in fiscal policy. And some of my students proudly lifted up their food stamp cards, and one student said he uses it to buy lobster.
You're always going to give bleeps like that. You know how many people?
But it was
during a break. I'm going to look up the.
It was a significant percentage of the students in the class that were proudly using the food stamps to buy lobster.
All right, I'm going to dig up some numbers that. We'll, okay. And we're good at digging up numbers. That's what we do, hell, you and me.
Exactly.
S&P futures down 24, and NASDAQ futures down 57. We're down more. We're creeping back. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 25. NASDAQ futures down 60. NASDAQ probably won't stay down. It's been on an absolute tear. The Dow has been actually down like 5 days in a row. But then again, nobody pays much attention to the Dow. Individual stocks in the Dow today. I got Caterpillar up 278. Amgen down a buck. I got Honeywell up a buck 36. J.P. Morgan down a buck 28. So net. Not crazy. The Dow futures are actually down another 173. This is after longest losing streak in the Dow since 2018, but the NASDAQ is going exactly the opposite direction. So we've got overseas over in Europe. We have DAX down 33.2%, FTSE down 65.8%, CAC around up 3, call that flat, so slightly lower. Not horrible. Nikkei down 92, still into over 39,000, trying to make that push towards 40,000, 39,368. Hang Seng down 95.5%. Shanghai down 24.7%. Everybody's looking at the Fed decision, which the meeting starts today. The decision will be tomorrow. Yesterday, Dow was down 110. S&P up 22. NASDAQ up 247. That's 1.2%. That's a big day. Bonds up 2 basis points, but still, it is 4.4. Hasn't done much out of this area in a while. Like I said, the 10-year is 4.4, so it doesn't surprise me. These guys are going to lower rates tomorrow, quarter, or announce it, because they've already done it. The Bund unchanged, 2.34. In Japan, 1.08. Oil. We were over 70 bucks, I think, yesterday, but now today we're a little balky on my machine here. What the hell? Ricky, why don't you do some traffic, weather, sports, and I'll come back to oil and gold.
Absolutely. Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:38 here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at about 36 degrees right now with a high of 43, cloudy and cooler. Tonight will be cloudy with a bit of snow late with little to no accumulation, low at 32 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 46 degrees right now with a high of 74, partly sunny and nice. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 45 degrees. Let's go to traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe is 41 minutes. We're looking at about 55 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf, 38 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 24 minutes. Lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 48 minutes. I'm sorry, 40 minutes. My bad. Let's talk about sports. The NBA yesterday, the Bulls beat the Raptors 122 to 121, a close match. And today, we have the Bucks playing the Thunder at 7:30 p.m. Capitals play the Blackhawks today at 7:30 p.m. For the NHL in United Center, Chicago. And let's talk about NFL Week 18. Yesterday, the Bears lose to the Vikings.
I thought you were going
to... I know, man. No, Bears lose to Vikings, so to 30, no surprise there. This Thursday, December 19, we have Broncos playing the Chargers at 7:15 p.m. Now we have a couple games on Saturday, December 21st. The Texans play at Chiefs, 12 p.m., and Steelers at Ravens, 3:30 p.m. Lastly, Sunday, December 22nd, we have Lions at Bears at 12 p.m., and Cardinals at Panthers at 12 p.m. as well. Back over to you, Chief.
We've got oil hanging right around the $70 number, $69.90, down 81 cents. It's been within $3 or $4 of $70 now for quite a while. Brent down 77 cents, 73.14. Natural gas down 3 cents, 3.18. RBOB down 2 cents, 1.95. We've had gold, which has been leaking lately too.
Down 12, another 12 bucks today, 26.57. Made it back to 2,700, came right back down. Silver down 29 cents, 30.76. Copper down 4 cents, 4.14. With foreign exchange, dollars a little higher. We've got the euro is under 105 again, 104.97. The British pound, 127. British pound has been stronger than the euro. So the trade there might have been to go long British pound or the short euro. Those two instead of leaving the dollar out of it. Crypto, 107, another 1,400 today. This is starting to make me more and more nervous every single day. You already gave us traffic, weather, sports. How about giving us back Hal?
Hey, Tom.
All right, yeah, what are you... I'm not gonna, and this food stamp, here's my issue with some of this. I think that food stamp recipients is like we're up to 42 million people, okay? I think there's a number they used to have it on this page. When you look at the median income numbers for an individual is now pushing 40,000. I don't see how the hell somebody, if you have, God help you, if you're a single parent, a couple of kids,
oh, yeah,
and you
definitely.
And you're renting. I read once, Helen, I don't know, that 42 million people get food stamps. I think there's another 15-20 million that qualify and are too proud to do it. Because I mean, if you've got a family, if you got any kind of rent which you're paying somewhere, and God help you if you need a car to get to work, and you got a couple of kids, and you're a single parent, I don't see how the hell you don't qualify for food stamps.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. But here's the rub: the more people that use food stamps to help them pay for the groceries that are unaffordable because of the government's inflation. More people that use these kind of benefits, these kinds of subsidies, the bigger the deficits the federal government runs, the
without
more money
out.
The Treasury's got to print, and the more inflation it creates.
It's an absolute vicious circle, Hal. And
it is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Other than who do you get to talk about this in the real world, except me? Have I mentioned this to anybody else? They look at me like I have four heads. They have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And yet it's so damn obvious. We're printing money. We're pushing up the stock market. We're degrading.
We're pushing up Bitcoin. Yeah, we're pushing up the stock market.
We're degrading the dollar. So we're propping up another currency. Well, duh.
Yeah.
I mean, this is simple, isn't it? And yet we seem to have. Nobody even talks about it. Nobody. And this
well,
is,
I think the goal. See, the Marx had it wrong. Marx pitted the worker against the capitalist. That's wrong.
Yep.
The class conflict has always been between the people who get taxed and the people who collect the taxes and pay themselves from those taxes. So you got tax receivers and taxpayers. That's where the conflict has always been. But the tax receivers needed to expand the number of people receiving tax payments in the form of paychecks or subsidies. So it brought firms in, it expanded the welfare state. Right, so that it can maintain its power, because before that, you had mutual aid societies. Every racial group had their own mutual aid societies. The Mormons still have their bishop storehouse. The Mormons still have their mutual aid societies. But when the federal government took over the welfare system, took over food assistance, it kind of eliminated all those mutual aid societies. And the thing about the mutual aid society is that because
well, careful with that. I'm going to say this. Chicago Food Depository feeds 200,000 people a day.
Well, I understand that, but when mutual aid societies were taking care of the people who couldn't afford the food or who lost their job and couldn't pay their rent, when the mutual aid societies were caring for people, they were people in that person's community. And the people receiving the assistance, there was this social stigma, this community stigma within their community, where eventually they wanted to get off of it. Now you have a system that's been centralized by the federal government for the most part, and there isn't any of that social pressure.
I think there still is, but
there is.
Well, I mean,
but
plus
the people,
the people that you're talking about, they're still there doing all this stuff. That's how bad the problems are.
Well, here's the thing, though. There are people that won't ever enroll in them. My in-laws would never ever take public assistance, and when they first came to this country. They're working in those old, nasty factory jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Garment industry of New York City before they were able to, you know, kind of set their foot.
God, it had to be brutal. It had to be brutal.
So they refused. The Haitian people that my mother-in-law knows, they refuse to take those kinds of assistance programs. But they're, but people who are raised in that system are oftentimes desensitized to the negative stigma of being on those systems. And, you know, if you grew up in a single-parent household who had to use food stamps and had to get government assistance for rent, you know, I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm just saying that it makes sense for you to continue to do so, right? When there is no, when there's not two parents in the household.
I think
I'm not saying the numbers are bad.
The numbers have a, here's,
I'm just saying they've been institutionalized.
I don't disagree with that, except when the when you look at here's the numbers right here. I'll just rattle them off. Median income right now, call it 40,000. I think it's a little higher than that. Median income
per person. The household is more like 60, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. Households is per person. Yeah. So I mean, you know, you and I guess we can go out and get married just to get more money. But most people, anyway, it's 40,000. It was.
Well, if you get married and have kids, you're not going to have more money.
Oh, right. In 2000, it was.
But you're going to have more joy, Tom.
Right. In 2000, it was 32,000. Okay, so it's up some. That's 25 years, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Median new home now 400. Back then, 168. A little bit more of a push, eh? Average new car now 49. Back then, 22. So even the car was up, you know, two and a half times. Your income is up 60%. Not even 60%. It's up 20%.
Add into that car component the cost of maintaining the car.
Parking, tolls.
You know, I don't want to buy a new car because, man, I can't do the maintenance.
In 2000, the toll.
I can't replace the alternator in a new car.
You know, in 2000, the toll over to Skyway was like 50 cents. Now it's $6.50. So, God, if you move to Hammond, Audrey sold a house to some people, and they couldn't wait to get out of Illinois, right? So they sell their house in Orland, and they buy a house, I don't think in Hammond, but somewhere over there. And the guy commutes downtown.
Yeah.
Well, they raised the parking taxes. They raise the tolls. What the hell is he? He's 17. He's $30 a day for tolls and parking. No, he's $40 a day. He's 800 hours a month in tolls and parking. And he says, "I'm down on the deal."
Yeah.
I mean, how else is he going to get here? He's got to come over the bridge, right?
Now the next question is this intentional or not? I mean, if you look at the history of the world, you have a few people at the top of the income distribution, at the wealth distribution. And the history of the world is characterized by this. That elite group of people want to remain at the top. And they need the serfs, the slaves. In Greece, most people were slaves. Only the aristocrats participated in the republic, in the democracy, right? I think 40,000 property.
Well, I mean,
owners.
You could call the serfs in England were.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they were defined as slaves, but you couldn't go anywhere.
Well, they were slaves because attached to the
sort of like
land,
sort of like a sharecropper, sort of like a coal miner back in the day. You couldn't go anywhere, even though you weren't technically a slave.
Yeah. They lived on subsistence levels, right? So that's been the history of the world, and the United States kind of bucked that for a few years. But it seems like the more time goes on, the more and more people are being thrown under the bus, the more and more people are becoming serfs to the system. They can't afford to buy the car, they can't afford to buy the house. Is it intentional? At this point, I don't know if it even has to be intentional. Maybe it's just the nature, the long run equilibrium of a political system. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Does it have to be
intentional? I don't know.
And what I don't want to see, and I don't know what I can do about it, except keep doing the show and hopefully he listens to all of us, I don't want the definition of a middle class 500 years from now being a societal aberration that happened in the U.S. between 1950 and 1985.
I don't either, yeah.
Because I think it's sinking. I mean, I don't see. I mean, when you have. I mentioned earlier in the show, if I came into one of your classes, I would say define profit to me. It's just the easiest thing in the world to define when I was in school.
Yeah.
Now it's not defined at all.
Well, now it's a dirty word.
Well, no, right? I, now it's a dirty word. But I mean, Eric brought it up first. He said this management class is taking things over. You think you're a shareholder? You don't own crap.
Yeah.
You don't get it. If you're a shareholder in Tesla, do you think you own the place? Do you have any idea say in what goes on in that board?
Well, there's that one Tesla stockholder who sued in Maryland and got the court. This one guy, and I don't even know if he owns the shares anymore, but he's the one shareholder in Delaware, sued Tesla and Elon Musk over the compensation package. And that one judge and that one shareholder was able to put the kibosh on it.
Well, for a while, for one year. Yeah. It doesn't mean that Elon Musk isn't going to pick the next board members.
Yep. Yeah.
So I mean, I guess. If you look at what's happening in the boy, Kevin and I have been talking forever about what's going on with the college football,
yeah,
and how private equity firms want to buy into. Well, I guess you could buy into the NFL now to a certain point.
Well, think about college football, man. College football is a system now that is not constrained by the draft. I mean, imagine the NFL with no draft for the last 50 years. What would be the salaries of the pro football players if there was no draft?
You know the answer to that. They'd be less.
No, they'd be more.
They'd be less.
LeBron James could have negotiated with any team when he came out of high school. He could have negotiated with any team. And he would have got a lot more than $8 million his rookie year.
So you've and what's the matter with that? Why can't they draft you as a professor? And you can't go anywhere else?
Well, see, what the draft is, though, the draft is a monopsonistic institution. Right, intended to keep the wage below the market wage.
Sure, it is.
That's what the draft is, right?
Yeah.
If you get rid of the draft, a Danny Ainge doesn't have to go play baseball for Toronto, third base for a year. He can just go to whatever team he wants.
Okay.
John Elway doesn't have to threaten to go to the baseball to get not be drafted by the Colts.
Maybe in football it's so closed, but in baseball because they have the. Arbitration system. I think in baseball the numbers would actually go down.
Yeah.
Anyway,
baseball is a much larger pool to hire, right?
Well, my point is, say I don't think there should be anything like that. But in college football, my question is, how long can they essentially dodge the word profit and stay tax free?
Yeah. I don't think there should be any tax free institutions. I mean. Hospitals, I mean, come on, they're not seeking to break even. Let's be honest.
No,
universities aren't seeking to break even. They're for profit.
The profit now is going into the.
They just call it something different,
It's going into the pockets of the people up top. Now those people do have to pay taxes on what they get. That part I understand, but the idea.
I think, honestly, Tom, the tax-free status of these nonprofits. Is one of the reasons why you have administration bloat.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. If it wasn't for the tax-free status, they'd be paying taxes.
But I had no idea that like Northwestern University doesn't even pay their water bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would they get that for free?
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, they don't do anything for free.
Yeah.
But I mean, how tax-wise, if Notre Dame or somebody of that ilk, they might be one of the last ones to do it. If somebody gets to buy 20% of the Alabama football program going forward, as they pretty much have turned into professional sponsored things. How can a place that is nonprofit give that guy a dividend?
Yeah.
How does that even work tax wise?
Well, you know the funny thing about college football, though, I think it's always been for profit. I mean, instead of paying players money directly legally. I mean, players are getting money on
you
the side.
You can't. Don't.
And think about this.
Don't go there. It's a matter of if I hit you with a water balloon, you say water doesn't hurt, and all of a sudden I get hit by a tsunami. It's a big difference. I mean, this is totally different than somebody getting 50 bucks to buy a sport coat 40 years ago.
What I'm saying, compensation is two parts. There's the amenities that people love, and there's the financial part. The pecuniary and the non-pecuniary. McDonald's, for example, part of its non-pecuniary compensation is a free lunch, a free meal, right? But in college football, before NIL, before the transfer portal, players being compensated. I mean, their facilities.
Well, they're getting tuition. They're getting room and board.
Well, but it was more than just room and board. If you compare their room and board to the average college student's room and board, there was a definite difference in their room and board.
There wasn't that much in Notre Dame.
They had their own, well, recently. They had their own, I mean, their workout facilities, their practice facilities, their locker rooms. That was all non-monetary compensation. I mean, UCLA built, what, $1 billion?
You better
give
somebody a locker room if you're going to make them be in practice three times a day.
Yeah, but, man, I'll tell you, that lock, I mean, if you have a choice between an Oregon where your locker rooms are like these lavish, luxury, relaxing locations with free barbershops and whatnot, and
that was not like that in my day, but
yeah, it's like that now. I mean,
well, sure it is.
The practice facilities before NIL, Arizona State I think was dumping $1 billion into theirs. Washington State has an indoor practice facility that's probably better than NFL's, right? So there was money there, and there was compensation. It was just non-monetary compensation, the frills, the swag.
Well,
that's part of the compensation.
The psychic income, sure.
Yeah,
but it wasn't. But it's not the same as now.
It's not the same as now, right? Because now it's legal, right? Before it was illegal. You know, pay players.
But you had when Notre Dame got written up on.
Remember Cam Newton? I remember reading an article about Cam Newton. His dad got a $50,000 tithe, and Cam, you know, went to Auburn. That was okay.
But I'm saying, there were all when Notre Dame got written up when Lou Holtz was there. It was, you know, how many years ago? It was for stuff like kid's uncle died, didn't have the bus fare to go home. One of the coach gave him $40 for the bus ride or something. That kind of crap. That was pretty abusive.
That is pretty abusive.
And the stuff like you made the kids in those days, they made the kids wear sport coats when they went on the road. If they couldn't afford a sport coat, somebody donate the sport coat. That's wrong. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, it was absolutely chicken crap stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff, come on.
Well, I don't know if it was because in the Pac-12, the original four Pac-12 schools, it wasn't called the Pac-12 back then. It wasn't even PAC, right? It was some weird acronym. They I think it was California, Washington, Oregon, and the fourth school. I forget who the fourth school was. But I think it was USC. They had to disband what was a conference at the time because all four were paying players to play.
Well, sure they were. But it's not...
I'll tell you, SMU wasn't the only school in the Southwest Conference paying their players to play.
They got the death sentence. So did Southern Cal when McKay left.
But
you remember? Your old girlfriend, the Tark's wife. Remember her?
Yeah.
With the big huge blonde hair. I don't think you're a big huge blonde hair guy, but
she looked like Tammy Faye.
And when she said, "I don't understand how come they're always coming after us when our guys are wearing letter jackets and the guys from UCLA are wearing mink coats."
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, SMU wasn't the only Southwestern Conference school paying their players.
Well, they ran it on each other, didn't they?
Yeah. I'm just saying they weren't. I mean, come on, Oklahoma, Nebraska, they weren't paying players.
But it's not everybody had a guy, right? But it was my cousin when he went to Colorado. By the way, he's going to be 90 next week. He went to Colorado, and everybody had a guy that you could, an alumnus that you could sort of, but he didn't get. He still was in ROTC to make money, and he ended up being a service for a few years.
But at that time, what were pro players being paid at that time? Not very much.
No.
At that time, right?
No, almost. I'm thinking 1963.
Yeah.
The Bears won the championship, and I think
pro players were having to work at grocery stores during the offseason.
Doug Atkins was an all pro end. He probably was one of the top three in the game, and he even with his. Playing in the Pro Bowl, that check, I think he made $24,000 total. That included his the bonus for winning the championship.
Yeah. So those guys probably had to work some summers.
Well, they all did. That's why there were six exhibition games. These guys showed up totally out of shape. Nobody was there in the fall. They all worked. And Ed Obradovich was an insurance salesman. They all did something.
Yeah, they had to get in game shape, right? Yeah.
Well, that's why Stavak ended up being so wealthy. He actually got another whole
career.
Let
me ask you this question. Do you think part of the meteoric rise in NIL, an NFL football player, baseball player, and NBA basketball player salaries has anything to do with the Fed? I have colleagues that say no.
Everything, the money that the Fed has poured into the system, and you remind me so much of Milton Friedman. He used to say it's never even. That's why you can't let it happen.
Never. It's never even.
And that's why you guys. That's why you can't let it happen. And he goes, in the first bits and pieces of it feel so good. He goes, it's like your first beer. Yeah. But that you keep going. I mean, right now, the Fed cannot stop the juice because Trump, any president, not just Trump, does not want a market collapse on his watch. Yep. So right now, they're not going to cut. They're going to cut back a little bit, probably with the Musk and this other guy, a little bit in Washington. You know, they'll make a big story about firing 10,000 people. That's 0.1% maybe of the budget.
Yeah.
They're not going to take on the pharmacy companies. They're not going to take on the hospitals. They're not going to do anything like that.
I don't think they're even going to take off big food. There's just too much money.
They're not going anywhere near there. They're going to try and
it'll be all window dressing.
Well, because of the
I'll be shocked if it's anything more than window dressing.
Well, because of the collective stupidity of the American populace, he's going to raise tariffs as a way to raising taxes, and people will figure out that the taxes are on them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Speaking of this story, we got a dash here, but the story about Bernie Madoff, one of my buddies, by the way, went to Sox game this year, and it was his 80th birthday. Somebody, when I first came on the trading floor, he mentored me. Brilliant, brilliant man. He goes, Bernie Madoff, everybody knew what everybody else was making, and Bernie was making twice that, right?
Yeah.
Everybody knew that Bernie had an angle, that somebody was a stooge. What they didn't realize is they were the stooge. Right, and we're gonna this inflation thing. You know, the only thing different, honestly, Hal, and I say this, and people absolutely think I'm the difference between now and the 1970 some inflation is not in the inflation, not how it's happening. Too much money chasing too few goods. It's the government now is perfectly capable and perfectly willing to lie on the number.
Yep.
In those days,
yep. You're seeing that with employment numbers.
If it was 1% on the month, they told you it was 1%. Now, if it's 1%, they tell you it's. They tell you it's half of 1% or whatever. I've never seen this kind of institutional lying on a scale, and I think that more than anything else is screwed up our electoral system and screwed up everything.
Well, I think the people that work in these organizations that compile the statistics, they have an incentive to make sure that GDP is inflated by underreporting inflation. I think they do.
They're not the people that are saying. Medical's 6% of the population or economy. We know it's 21. Somebody high up the chain is doing that, and somebody, and it's nobody. Trump's not going to come in and say fix that.
If you're a priest of a religion, it is in your best interest to make sure that religion survives.
Well, I mean, Trump's not going to come in and say I want a straight number. No way on earth is he going to.
Oh no, he's not. No.
No. Uh-huh. Anyway, S&P futures down 22. NASDAQ futures. We'll see you. You'll be around Christmas Eve, right? We're doing a show.
Yeah, I'll be on the radio with you.
All right, bud. You take care. What are you guys hanging in Carolina? You're going back to New York for Christmas?
No, we're gonna cruise around North Carolina. Enjoy our new house.
In the big van or the little van?
Well, right now the van is out of commission. I had to replace the alternator, and I'm waiting for a part. And then I had to fix the door.
Okay.
And then I also stripped the oil drain plug.
Why'd you do that? I got it all fixed.
Yep.
Why'd you do that?
Well, I was in a hurry in New York to change the oil, and I crawled underneath the van while I was parked on the street, and I was coming in from the wrong angle, and I did it too quickly, and I accidentally torqued it the wrong direction from the wrong angle.
You're lucky you didn't get run over by a rat when you're on the ground.
Yeah, I know. But we're in a pretty good neighborhood in New York, so I wasn't too worried about the rats. I was more worried about the Uber drivers.
God. Anyway, have a good one. We'll talk at you next week. S&P futures up, down 21. NASDAQ futures down 51. We'll come back a little bit. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.